transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
A great show for you this week featuring the Lane twins, Gary and Larry, who created an award-winning documentary about their journey to meet one of their idols, Dolly Parton. The twins have won over 25 film festival awards around the world and have received support from Dolly herself, not to mention Rosie O'Donnell and actress Kristen Chenoweth. We also chat with executive coach and author of the book From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath, about being happy and content in your career. We also welcome our music editor, Sharon Hyland, tell us what new music releases are on the way this month.
Capture your need for sound.
An amazing documentary has been released that is creating quite a stir around the world, so far having won over 25 festival awards, both in the U.S. and abroad. The film is called Hollywood to Dollywood and was conceptualized by twins Gary and Larry Lane, and they join us to talk about this project and the roller coaster ride they went through on their journey of meeting one of their idols, Dolly Parton. Gary and Larry, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, Kelly. Thank you for having us.
So, Gary, can you sort of set the scene for us? Tell us where the idea for this documentary came about and why it touches you and Larry so specifically.
Yes, absolutely. We've always written screenplays, but this was a specific screenplay called Full Circle we wrote just for Dolly, and when we finished it, it had been about 5 years in the making. We sent it to her managers in Nashville. They sent it back to us unopened and unsolicited material, so they didn't open it, so we were a little discouraged, but we know from childhood always going to Dollywood on the opening weekend we had been before. She's always there, so that's where the idea of this road trip documentary, we're going to do a cross country, try to meet Dolly on the 25th anniversary, the opening weekend, and see if we can hand her the script, because the management had sent it back, so we knew that it didn't get anywhere close to her. So we felt like if we tried to deliver it personally, that she would be accepting of the screenplay.
Now, when you set off on this adventure, and I'll ask this question to Larry, you know, of wanting to get the documentary made, did you really know what you guys were getting yourself into?
No, we honestly, when we first started the journey, we really just wanted, you know, one of our friends, John Lavin, he's the director, but he's a really big Dolly fan as well. And we said, you know, well, if we're going to go cross country, why don't we really, you know, go out all out and see who we can meet along the journey? But really, the idea of the documentary just started out really small, but that's what kind of exploded in the film festivals. I mean, we've been to 60 festivals around the world, like you just said, but, you know, the documentary really took off more than we ever thought it would. And then along the way, we kind of have our own journey too, and I think that's what really hit home with audiences.
And like you said, it sort of seems that, you know, you had not only this far journey to travel physically, but it seems like you had a long journey emotionally as well.
Yes, this is Gary. Absolutely. Growing up Southern Baptist in North Carolina, we knew that we were gay and we knew it was not going to be accepted. But very early on in life, we remember, you know, we'd see Dolly on interviews. And, you know, whatever show she was on, they were always fascinated, especially back in the 80s when it was, you know, not as accepted. They would always be fascinated with the fact that she embraced her gay fans, and they would always ask her about that. And she would always say, you know, I love everybody for who they are. I don't believe anyone should be judged. Everyone should just be allowed to live their life. And I'm not God. I'm not a judge. So she would always say things like that that made us feel like she would be accepting of us, even though, you know, our family or our, you know, our church or whoever might not be as accepting. So that's kind of what it started. And then we obviously wrote the script about her. And when we were on this cross-country trip, it became more than just giving her the script. It kind of became letting her know what she has meant to us throughout our lives.
Now, I wanted to ask you this because as I was, you know, watching some of the film and also going over the information about you two and the documentary and all that sort of stuff, I was wondering if your, I guess, love of Dolly partially is because of where you guys grew up. Like, she's, you know, Southern and you guys are Southern. Because part of me was like, well, why did they fall in love with her so much as opposed to, like, other maybe gay icons, if you will, like Cher or Madonna?
Well, this is Larry. One thing about it, like you said, growing up in North Carolina, we always say that Dolly is kind of like the country Cher because, you know, we always listen to country music being from the South. So we were always kind of drawn to Dolly, and we always tell the joke, you know, we didn't know how our parents didn't really know we were gay because we would only get one vacation when we were kids, and it always came down because we were in North Carolina to either Dollywood, which is in Tennessee, or Disney World, which is, you know, Florida. And we've been to Dollywood 8 times. We've never been to Disney World. So.
That was a sign right there. Joining us on the show right now are twins Gary and Larry Lane, who are behind the award-winning documentary Hollywood to Dollywood. For more information, make sure to check out their website, hollywoodtodollywood.com. Can you explain maybe a deeper reason why you have such affinity for Dolly? Like, what's the epicenter of your, you know, love and devotion to her?
I honestly believe our parents really did love her. They loved Kenny Rogers, Patsy Cline, like all the older country artists, but we always loved her because of that connection. You know, we always felt an acceptance from her we didn't feel from our family. And I think, you know, a lot of people still feel that way because when we were on the road, whether it was a trucker in Arkansas or a waitress in Texas, anybody that we would talk to, they all had something positive to say about Dolly and, you know, how amazing they thought she was. And I think she's, in some ways, I feel like she's a little bit more brave to stand by her gay fan base than like a Cher or a Lady Gaga, because she is doing it like in country music where the fans are much more finicky, they're much more judgmental. And I think it says a lot for her to do that, to step up for her gay fans.
And do you find it, you know, again, because you are from the South, you know, and you mentioned she is being so brave because so many of her fans are obviously, you know, Southern and are sort of part of that whole milieu. You know, do you find that it's sort of interesting that she's been able to be who she is and pull off who she is and keep her country fans, as opposed to other artists who, let's say they would have taken that stance, they might have lost their record sales? And there's actually a country artist right now that's escaping my like, her name is escaping me, but she's the one that came out like 2 or 3 years ago. And she
Right,
yeah, and she said that she has definitely lost, you know, fans and record sales because of her being open about it.
Yes, and Shelley Wright was, because we're friends with her online and everything, she's actually gone out publicly saying that Dolly Parton and Reba McEntire were two of the only artists that really stood by her, and Dolly even showed up and presented her with a GLAAD award for kind of being out there in the public. But, you know, one thing I'll say about Dolly with the movie especially, we've seen it. We've played in 60 film festivals around the world. We played in Canada. We played in Toronto. We played in Sydney, Australia, Glasgow, Scotland. She has huge followings all around the world because she really has got out there when she did 9 to 5. You know, Sandy Gallen is the manager that we credit for getting her out of country music and out to the world because he put her in 9 to 5 and became her Hollywood agent out here. And she always said, I'm not leaving country music, I'm taking country with me. And she really has gone around the world, because a lot of people around the world, when they think of country music, they think of Dolly Parton.
Correct. That's for sure. And, you know, if we turn towards you guys for a second, as I was watching again some of the footage, what really struck me, and I guess I wanted your thoughts on it, is the fact that you seem like such sweet boys, and you can see the love and the passion that you have for what you're doing in your eyes, and you can see the love and the passion that you have for your family, you know. And the gist that we understand is obviously it's been a difficult road for the two of you to come out and be gay and have them accept you. Has Dolly sort of been like a surrogate mother to you because your own mother has had such difficulties with handling the fact that you're homosexual?
Yes, and this is Larry. You know, and a lot of people along the way said, you know, we kind of look to Dolly as that mother figure. You know, we love our mom, we love our dad, that's our family, but we would always remember, you know, with the preacher and our parents and just stuff that would be said, we just felt like we weren't accepted the way we were, and we never got that from Dolly. So in a way, you know, she was a figure of hope that, you know, there is, you know, there's a chance that you can get out there and live your dreams, because she never really cared what anybody thought. When she was coming up following her dreams, she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and that's what we did with the screenplay by getting it to her. But it was also like a tribute to her for what she meant to us in our life. But absolutely, there was acceptance there that we felt like we weren't getting from our moms. We were kind of drawn to her.
And is that why you guys left, you know, South North Carolina and moved to Los Angeles as well, or moved to California? Was it because you couldn't be who you wanted to be in your hometown?
Yes, part of it definitely was because it's just, and even the movie shows this, it's so much harder in the South to be gay. They're like 20, 30 years behind the rest of the United States on, you know, the fight for equality and equal rights. So it is harder there. And, you know, a lot, because we were twins, we were getting, you know, auditions and things like that. So it did help us to make that move to Hollywood because we were working and, you know, and doing different shows and commercials and stuff. So that did help us because we had an income and we had a, you know, a career out here. But, you know, we go home 4 times a year back to North Carolina. But when we go back there, it's very hard because, you know, you still have the, you know, people wearing their Amendment 1 buttons and things like that. And that's the town that we grew up in. So, but that's where our family is.
Do you feel that you are, you know, two men who are torn in two? Because, again, when watching you guys on film, it just seems that you have such love for where you come from, but you can't be there full time.
Well, we always say it feels kind of like we have two lives because when we go to North Carolina, you know, we respect our parents and our dad's having a lot of health issues right now. So our mom's got a lot on her anyway, so she doesn't really want to know about it. So we don't really talk about it, you know, so we kind of say we've got our North Carolina life and we've got our California life. But the thing that really, you know, sucks and really hurts is, you know, we've both been with our partners for 6 years and they don't even know their names.
Really?
Yes, yeah. We don't talk about our lives at all.
So they never ask you at all. It's sort of like, we know that it's going on, but I don't want to know about it.
Exactly. Right, and that's the stance that they have had. Now, our dad is more accepting because our mom has the Southern Baptist. She grew up Southern Baptist. We grew up Southern Baptist. But our dad was never the one to go to church with us, and so he doesn't have that religious side. So he even reached out to me before we went to a festival in Scotland and asked if he could see the movie. And, you know, we told our parents before the movie came out, we said, you know, we want y'all to know that we've done this movie. We gave the script to Dolly, and at that time we had already heard from Dolly's people. She was going to let us have 17 of her songs to be in the film, so they knew Dolly was behind the movie. But we let them know because we didn't want it to kind of come up and be something that kind of knocked them back. We wanted them to know it was coming, and we told them they could see it. And at that time, our mom said she didn't want to see it. But, you know, later our dad did reach out, and he did watch the film.
And what was that like, knowing that your dad, you know, took an interest and was willing to see all the hard work and effort you two have put into this project?
Well, what really surprised me was we were actually in Scotland. We had gone to a festival that they invited us to be guests at the screening and host a Q&A. We were in Scotland, and when we got back, me and my brother went to the gym because we were just kind of getting back into our routine. And my partner, Mike, who I've been with for 6 years, he called me at the gym and he goes, "You're not going to believe this." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "Your dad sent me a Facebook message." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Your dad sent me a Facebook message and it said, you know, I just watched the movie and I want to thank you for being in his life and I hope I get to meet you someday." And then he signed it, "Love, Dad." And I broke down crying in the gym because I never in a million years would have believed that that would have happened. So I knew that just what we had done with the movie that had got me that close to my dad where he could reach out to my partner was a blessing in itself.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I'm so happy for the two of you. And something else I wanted to bring up as well, do you think because you have each other that this journey has been easier? And I mean the journey even starting back from when you both realized you were gay, because I'm assuming that it might have been a blessing and a curse to both be gay.
Well, one thing about it, when we were younger, we remember, you know, in church, we're Southern Baptist, so we would go to church 3 times a week, and you'd hear the preacher, "You're going to burn in hell," you know, so we would always, you know, really, my brother, I was closer to him than anybody because he was my twin brother, so for the longest time, I would have an even bigger wall between us because I didn't want him to find out about me because I thought he would turn his back on me like the preacher was saying. So it took us till we were about 16 when we finally found out about each other, and then, you know, we were a little bit upset because the awkward, you know, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, we could have been going through it together, but I definitely find having the twin there and somebody to completely support you, that's helped us make the moves and follow our dreams and everything. So it's kind of like your best friend is, you know, built in there with you.
And I understand you have another sibling. Is it an older or a younger brother?
He's an older brother. He's 5 years older.
And how has he dealt with everything, like, for, you know, my listeners to understand, like, has it been difficult for you guys to keep up a relationship with him?
Yeah, it definitely has been hard. He has our niece and nephew, and then, you know, he's married. But they live really close to our parents. But he, because of what's happened with the movie, because we were on the Rosie O'Donnell show. She had a new show on OWN, and she talked to us about the movie and the content of the movie. So that hit North Carolina pretty hard once it aired. So it's been a lot more mainstream, and we haven't shied away from the media because we're actually proud of the project. So, you know, he's had a lot of people he works with come up and say, oh, we didn't know your brothers were that way. And so he's got, like, some
that fact, way. They
that
can't
way.
Say
yeah. yeah, a lot of our, you know, our mom will even say that way. She'll say, I didn't know that Ellen was that way. So it's just a whole different way of life. But, you know, it's our brother, and he loves us. And, you know, he just kind of gets a backlash in the town. And we have to respect the fact that they are still there in our small, closed-minded town, and we're kind of out here in Hollywood, you know, living our life right now.
And how does his children relate to you? Like, is that okay? Like, do they have more of an open mind, or is it harder again because they are growing up in a somewhat of a closed society?
They're in the closed society, so we pretty much...
They know, but like, they don't talk about
it. We're the best uncles in the world that get them Xbox and all the cool games, but we really, you know, we don't talk to them about our personal lives, and they don't ask us why we don't have a girlfriend. It's just never talked about. We're just the uncles that get to come back and spend time with them and take them to the movies and all of that stuff.
Joining us on the show are twins Gary and Larry Lane, again, who are behind the award-winning documentary Hollywood to Dollywood. Again, check out their website, hollywoodtodollywood.com. What do you want people to take away from your documentary?
I would just say don't be afraid to chase after a dream. And always be proud of who you are, because one thing that happened with this documentary, we initially started the documentary just to go and try to give Dolly the script. That was what we wanted to do. But the first couple that we met, and it was divine intervention, or call it what you will, but the first couple we met, they were just a really nice couple. We called them the friendly truck stop couple, and they asked if they, we told them about the journey, they asked if they could say a prayer for us, and they did. They did like a prayer circle, and my partner was there, Mike, and so I didn't tell them that Mike was my boyfriend. We just said, you know, this is Mike, this is John. So after they signed the releases and we kind of left them and went on down the road, I felt really guilty because we had not been 100% honest with them about who we were. And from that point on, it took a different turn because I said, you know, Larry, we have to be true to who we are, you know, that Mike is my partner and what we're trying to do. And the documentary took a whole turn, a different turn after we met that couple.
You know, as you were traveling again along, I guess if we can call it the Bible Belt in a way, were you nervous about this? Like when you left, like were you scared again that something might happen should people figure out who you were? And again, because you said, you know, the southern states are such a closed society.
Well, one, you know, we always knew, I mean, with John being there, he always knew there could be a chance for that. And there was one incident, we were in Arkansas, and one of the girls, a camera girl, she was a lesbian, but she had really short hair. And right when we walked in Arkansas, we were in Arkansas, we went into Walmart, and three or four guys came walking up to her and said, girls around here have long hair. So I was like, turn the cameras on, who knows what's going to, no, but it was just like, you know, we always had, and there was a moment in the campsite, we would always go to these little campsites, little COA campgrounds, KOA, but you would tell the incident.
Yeah, there was a point where me and Mike were kind of inside the RV and just kind of exchanged a kiss and looked out the window because we heard these guys that were kind of making some noise, and they had seen me and Mike, and so, like, do a kiss. And we were like, we're in Texas, so someone could, like, burn our trailer down because they're like, oh, the gays are in that trailer. So what happened was Jen grabbed my ball cap off, walked out with Mike, sat on the picnic table with him, and act like she was flirting him.
Like,
and
like she was just
a girl in a ball cap. Because Jen had a, you know, she had a nice figure. So then they kind of would feel like they had just thought.
Seen it wrong.
Oh.
So, and you know, just to have to think about stuff like that was a little crazy in middle America.
Yeah, and especially, you know, in 2012, I always find it amazing when we hear stories of just, you know, such discrimination. You know, you hear it a lot in the States. It does happen up in Canada, obviously elsewhere around the world. But do you find it still, you know, so disheartening because the neck of the woods that you guys are from are so far behind?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why we always will try to say in media, like, things like it gets better, you know, the Trevor Project. We try to always mention things because a lot of kids in the South that are 15, 16, 17 and hearing their preachers tell them they're going to burn to hell, a lot of them don't make it because they end up, like, committing suicide, and there's so many issues. And, you know, it's just people's ignorance and not wanting to learn and look at the statistics. And so Larry's going to
Well, see, that's another thing with the little kids. You know, that's who we really want to get our message to, that it's okay to be who you are. Because as Gary just said, you know, kids in the South, you know, when you turn to your family and they turn their back on you or they slap you in the face and throw you out of the house, I say in the movie, you know, it's a horrible feeling not to be accepted. It's the worst thing in the world not to be accepted by your family. And that's why so many kids are killing themselves, predominantly most of it's in the southern areas.
And with regards to your religion, I wanted to ask you this as well, because it struck me, you know, again, watching things. A friend of mine, for example, she is Ukrainian Catholic, and she is gay, and her mother has not, you know, acknowledged her partner for the last 10 years, and it's been a struggle. And I asked her, you know, because you're Ukrainian Catholic, and obviously a lot of the Catholics have a big problem with homosexuality, you know, has it been hard for you to come to terms with your religion and your life? Because I'm sure some of the teachings that she went through were probably, you know, anti-gay as she grew up. And she said that it was a struggle for her to meld the two together. Have you been able to put some of your religion together with your life, or have you had to leave that Southern Baptist mentality?
Well, we always say, you know, another line I use in the movie is, you know, I don't believe that God put me on this earth to burn me in hell. You know, God created us all as we are, and so I still believe in God, absolutely, but I also believe that I'm here for a reason. I'm supposed to be exactly who I am, and I'm going to live my life and be happy. So our mom always says, you know, you guys just pray about it, and we say, Mom, every night I pray to be happy, and that's exactly what I am. And, you know, we have had a lot of blessings. We've worked on a lot of amazing projects. We've had a lot of positive things happen. So we know, you know, that we have been blessed, and we would never, you know, turn our back and say we don't believe in God, because we do.
And do you take issue, though, with, you know, Southern type religion that does have that anti-gay stance? Like, do you take issue with it, or do you leave that for someone else to deal with and just try to put your message of positivity out there?
Well, absolutely. You know, it preaches hate, and, you know, judge not lest you be judged, you know. So how are they going to sit there? That's why we love Dolly, because she goes, I'm not God, I'm not a judge, I'm not here to talk about anybody. I believe everybody is born as they are. But when you're spreading the message of hate, like in some of those churches, like they do, I think one of the pastors just said, you know, if you have a gay child, you should punch him in the face or starve him to death. I mean, what message is that?
If he's effeminate, you should punch him in the stomach and toughen him up. That was in North Carolina. We're very ashamed to say.
Wow. And what do you think of these, you know, because I've read this before in articles, you know, for several years about families of gay children in the States that send their gay child to gay camp to get rid of the gayness. Like, what do you think about that?
I think it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. It's just a way for some kind of camp counselor to try to make money off people, because they're not going to camp the gay away.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's proven.
Regarding, you know, your Hollywood support, again, your Hollywood community, we see so many great people in the documentary, including Chad Allen, obviously, who's an actor that many people, you know, watched growing up on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Women, and other stories and other shows. What kind of support have you received from the Hollywood community in general?
Oh, it's been amazing. Like, we had some Beth Grant, Leslie Jordan, Lance Black, Chad Allen. They were all in the film. But even since the film has come out, we've had Polly Perrette from NCIS. She made a YouTube about how amazing the video was and that we were like the new Freedom Riders. And then just yesterday, well, actually September 1st was Lily Tomlin's birthday. So Larry just went to the local place right down the street. It's called Twain's. And he went in there, and Lily Tomlin was in there, and it was actually her birthday, and she was 73. But Larry had a copy of the movie in the car, and he said, Lily, you know, we loved you and Dolly in 9 to 5, and we've always been a fan of yours. And he said, I wanted to give you this. And she goes, well, today's my birthday, so that's the perfect day. And then she read the box, and she's like, Twins with a Dream. She goes, I've been reading about this online. She goes, I've really wanted to see this. So that was just like another little random thing that was another blessing that lets us know we're doing the right thing.
That is fantastic. And what are you guys going to do next? What is up next for you? Do you continue to promote the film, and then what's to come?
Well, we have a theatrical release. We're playing in Manhattan right now, so we're in New York, and then we actually start in Los Angeles. We'll be playing September 6th through the 13th. We're playing here at the Lindley Theaters. And then we actually finished our festival run with a Canadian tie-in because we actually played the Real Heart Film Festival in Toronto, and we won Best of the Festival and Best Documentary. So that ended our film festivals in June, and we just signed with Breaking Glass Pictures, and they are actually the beginning of November. They're going to have the film everywhere, Amazon, iTunes. It'll be across the board. And a fun thing with Dolly is she has a new book coming out called Dream More, and it's all about how she followed her dreams and how she wants to help her fans follow their dreams. So we're really going to segue into that because we're excited about our movie coming out in November and her new book coming out in November.
And if people want to watch your documentary before November, is there a way that they can get their hands on it?
Yes, at hollywoodtodollywood.com, they can get the DVD there. And another thing we want everybody to know, we have a contract signed with Dolly for all 17 songs to stay in the movie. And then we also, 10% of every DVD sold, whether it's on our website, Amazon, iTunes, wherever the DVD is sold, 10% goes directly to her Imagination Library, which is her literacy program that promotes children's reading around the world.
That is a great initiative and a great thing for you guys to support. Well, congratulations on all of this, and I know all of us are going to be looking forward to your next project as well.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And, we'd love for people to follow us on Facebook. We're the Lane Twins, and there's also a Hollywood to Dollywood Facebook. So just thank you for having us on. We really appreciate it. I know Dolly's huge in Canada.
No problem. We are happy to have you on the show. Again, that is twins Gary and Larry Lane, who are, again, behind the award-winning documentary Hollywood to Dollywood. Go to their website, hollywoodtodollywood.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Taking a look at what is going on in the world of music is our music editor, Sharon Hyland.
Well, Kelly, 2 years after Matchbox 20 announced that they'd be starting work on a new album, we get North. Another solid effort from a band that stood out amid many bands in the late 90s that didn't. You can look for ZZ Top's La Futura on the 11th. This is the first album from that little old band from Texas in 9 years. They're promising fans a taste of the early days and still hold their spot as a relevant force that continues to rock. Speaking of relevance, and also on the 11th, Bob Dylan's Tempest will probably not give us any sing-alongs, but his 35th studio album will please fans with a 14-minute fictionalized account of the Titanic, which, when you think of the movie, really saves you a lot of time. Hey, Pink is back. The new mom returns without missing a beat and with her edge intact, as we heard throughout the summer with the first song called Blow Me, One Last Kiss. We can look for her 6th album as of the 18th called The Truth About Love, and who better to go to get that? Nelly Furtado has been working on her new one since 09, and The Spirit Indestructible, also on the 18th, is her first English language album in 6 years. We got a taste of this one this summer too, with Big Hoops, Bigger the Better, and it's a great welcome back. And the 25th anniversary of Michael Jackson's Bad will not go unnoticed or unmarked. Depending on your MJ needs, you'll have the standard 2-disc set with some bonus tunes, the deluxe edition 4-disc set, which will get you the standard, plus a concert CD and concert DVD. And if that's not enough for you, the deluxe collector's edition, the vinyl packages, and some other pretty easy to find exclusives will give you something to brag about, but will totally come with a bigger price tag. No Doubt will make their triumphant return as a collective with Push and Shove, and Green Day fans can look forward to getting their hands on the first of 3 albums on the way. Uno will be out by the end of this month. We can get into all the details about those next time. See you then.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Right now, you may not be in your optimal job or career that you planned on when you were a kid or a bright-eyed college student. In fact, you may only be staying in your current post because of insurance purposes or it pays well enough for you to handle your mortgage payments. Whatever the reasons, now is the time to change how you feel about your current job so that you are in a much better mental state on a regular basis. To help get us to this better place is executive coach and author of the book From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Ruth, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, Ruth, being happy and content seems to be something, you know, very important these days when it comes to someone's work life. Why do you think, you know, this has become such a hot topic?
Good question. I think that generations shift, Kelly, and I think in previous generations, there was sort of an approach that, you know, work was work, and that's, you know, there was a separation between work and your personal life, and you know, you just went and did your job. I think today people want more than that. They want their work to be an expression of who they are. And that's a part of being happy.
And should people really take into account that being happy is important? Because I think, you know, just like you said, a lot of old school folks, you know, just sort of had the mindset, I think, you know, put your time in and hopefully, you know, some days out of the year you'll be happy at your employment.
Well, I do think it's important, and I'm kind of the old school era, and I want to be happy in my work. So I think it's sort of changing culturally. I think that there are a couple of things. One is that people are recognizing that work is a huge part of our lives. We spend a lot of time at it. We interact with other people, and that should be a pleasurable experience when we can make it such. So, and you know, ultimately what we're learning is through research is that people who are happier, and I'm happy to describe to you what I mean by happiness, if you'd like, but people who are happier at work actually thrive at work. They do better at work than people who are unhappy.
And can you explain, I guess, some of the characteristics? Well, I guess because, you know, my question that I would have, I guess, is, you know, if you are in a job that is not necessarily your first choice, but it's something that you can't leave right now, you know, for financial reasons or whatever, how do you sort of turn things around so that you can look at your situation differently?
Right. Great question. So can I start by explaining what I mean by happiness?
Yes.
Perfect answer. Okay. So when I talk about happiness, I use I describe it in the way that is used by positive psychology. And that means there are three levels of happiness. And the first level is called hedonic. And that means, like, you know how when you buy a car and you can't wait to go to work because the car smells so great, mm-hmm. the new car, even if you don't like your job? Well, that gives you a little bump. It doesn't last long, but that's a bump. The next level is called engagement, and that's where you're doing something that you're both really good at and that you love doing. That's really kind of the secret sauce. And then the third level is meaning. That is where you're involved in something higher than yourself. So here's the thing. If you are involved in a job that you don't quite love, let's look at that second level called engagement, where you're doing something that you're good at and that you really like doing. Maybe there's a way for you to get assignments that use your skills better than they're currently being used. Or maybe you can buddy up with somebody at work who, and there's a great story in the book about someone who did exactly this. She's really good at strategy. She found somebody who was good at the detail work. They buddied up. They worked together really well for 5 years. So they were both able to sort of slice out their work and work in areas that they both enjoyed more. So that's one very powerful way of improving your situation at work. There are others.
Can you give us some examples of those as well?
Well, I'll tell you, this research is fascinating in terms of happiness, right? So researchers have studied people who thrive in naturally difficult situations, you know, inner city environments that are very difficult. And they learned that these people who thrive naturally have some characteristics. They take full responsibility for themselves. They don't blame anybody else for the situation. They seek out mentors. They help other people because they believe that helping comes back tenfold. They focus on their strengths and not on their weaknesses. In other words, we've all got things to work on, but they really focus on their strengths. And they believe that life has meaning. So if you take any of those characteristics, you know, taking full responsibility for yourself at work and not blaming everybody for the situation that you're in, being helpful to others, boy, that is a real strong way of giving yourself a happiness boost. Seeking out mentors within your organization. These are all things that you can do every day to be helpful. And then one that I've not mentioned and I'll mention briefly now is, and I think a lot of people have heard about this, but it's practicing gratitude. Being grateful literally for the small things. We tend to focus so much on wanting the big things. They're hard to get, and right now, tough in this economy. If we can focus on some of the small things that we're really grateful for, that actually has been demonstrated clinically to relieve depression. I mean, so that's a great happiness booster.
And I actually wanted to ask you something, because I was listening to you talk, and something sort of just came to mind, because it really feels like, you know, it's your attitude. Now, again, you might not be in a job that you want to be in, and it, you know, you're hoping to get to the next level. But if you are sort of, you know, needing to stay there for the time being, I feel like if you really do have a positive attitude about it and can be happy about it, that it will make everything better. And not in like a fake way, but almost like you said, just grasping onto even little things, like the coffee machine is great. You know what I mean? So that's going to make a bit of my day better, you know?
Well, I think that's true. People talk about having a positive attitude, and I think that's important, but the question is, what does that mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it means focusing on the things that are positive in your environment. And for most of us, even if we're in a difficult environment, there's something positive around us. And I have another story that I just love in the book about a time that I'm a very healthy person, but I was in the hospital for 4 days. And on the last day, this fellow came in, and he was preparing the bed next to mine for a post-op patient to come in. And he was just fabulous. He was scrubbing the bed, and he was explaining to me how important his job was. I mean, this is a guy who's literally, you know, scrubbing toilets, scrubbing the bed. He said, because this is a person who's just had surgery, we have to make sure there are no germs in this room.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he told me a moving story about his daughter who has a spinal problem. And anyway, as he left, he told me that he and his son were going to be playing guitars at their church over the weekend. This is a guy who did not have an easy life.
Mm-hmm.
Worked several jobs. He had a disabled daughter. He was not, you know, CEO of a corporation. And this guy was genuinely happy. I was smiling when he left the room.
Joining us on the show is executive coach and author of the book From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Check her out, www.garath.com. Ruth, is it important to be sort of self-aware, you know, how you act and behave at work? Because I'm assuming if you constantly have some kind of negative vibe going on, that this can impact your, you know, your well-being and especially in the long term at work.
I love that question, Kelly. You know, I write about this. I say I have a chapter called Free Range Emotions Tanks Careers. You know, you really just can't, you know, it's a group dynamic in a work environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all have to bring our best foot forward to help in these make the environment a positive. So I, you know, given an example of, you know, having a negative attitude at work is like wearing a sign on your back that says just ignore me.
Right.
Because that's what will happen. People say, oh, that, you know, you ask them to do something and it's always a difficult response. So listen, you know, you think about the kind of people that you like to work with, right? They're helpful. How can I help you? What can I do? Hey, that love that dress. You know, anything
right.
That's positive. And these are the kind of people who are naturally happy and you're, as you said, not fake. And we know, again, through research, that people who are naturally happy at work, meaning they are not faking it, and you may not have been born happy, but you're working on some of these techniques, and you're being helpful, and you're taking responsibility, all that sort of thing. These are people who, in the work environment, get better reviews from their bosses, they get more support from their peers, they're healthier outside of work, and they make more money.
That's amazing. And I think that's, you know, not the more money part, but if you do have this great attitude, I think good things are basically set to come to you.
Well, exactly. And the other thing, Kelly, that's so important is when the bad things come, because look, life is life. You know,
mm-hmm.
We all get hit with things. When the bad things come, if you've developed these skills, these characteristics, these traits, you will be much more resilient. And that simply means that we bounce back from life's inevitable difficulties more quickly than we would otherwise. We don't stay we don't stay emotionally depressed or tanked
right.
For a long time. And that's a key to living a good life because, like I said, things happen, illness, you know, you lose a job, a relationship, something. But how you handle that, your ability to bounce back, it's important to take the time and recognize pain and go through it and experience it. Don't try to fight it. But how long you stay in there really is dependent on the skills that you have that allow you to move through it in a healthy and a quicker way than you would otherwise.
What do you say for a person, like let's say, you know, a person has lost a job, and let's say it's a job that they actually really wanted and really enjoyed having, and then it's, you know, it's gone poof. And then, you know, and let's say too that they have worked super hard to get there, and when they got the job, it almost felt like everything that they had to go through to get there was justified, because it's like, I finally got, you know, the cherry on top. And if it's taken away from you, and then you inevitably, I'm assuming this person would go through a rough time, I suppose that person needs to almost learn from that experience, and then it can push them forth through the rest of their life, like you said, to be resilient, because life is a set of ups and downs.
Well, it is. And, you know, the truth is, in certainly in my experience and in, again, the research, that We do learn from our difficulties. There's no perfect path. And you know, the example is if a baby, you know, the first time a baby tried to walk, if they fell down, they said, oh, I failed. I'm not going to try that again. Well, we wouldn't be walking around today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are inevitable ups and downs. And yes, sometimes we lose things that are so precious to us. But, you know, it's an opportunity to say, okay, what do I have to do now? What do I want to do now to create the kind of life that I want? And that means, you know, when we're not working, our job is to go find a job. And we take every day and we work through every day with that goal in mind. And persistence does pay off.
Ruth, can you tell us more about your book, From Hired to Happy? What do you want your readers to take away from it?
Well, what I'd like them to... What I wanted to write a book that would help people develop strong professional skills that would help them at work and also build resilience, which helps them at work and in life. I had the benefit of being my first job was with IBM, and in those days the training was extensive. And I've been consulting to some of the largest companies in the world for a long time, and this doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, what's called the value proposition, meaning that people come into a job, they're not expected to stay there cradle to grave, right?
Right.
So I wanted something that would say, hey, listen, you know, here are some skills. They're doable, they're buildable. And if you learn these and if you do these, you will have a much better chance of thriving at work and in life than if you don't learn them. And I wanted to create, you know, it's not a big book. It's filled with stories. It's got exercises. I'm hoping it's fun. And that people could kind of buddy up and learn together from it. And help each other. So it's really meant to be imminently readable, something that, and skills that you can build upon.
Now, if you have someone who is, you know, maybe because they have been bumped and bruised along the way and they haven't, because I think, you know, again, as you were speaking to me, I felt like I got a bit of a light went off. And I feel like, you know, there's two types of people. Like either if you take the bumps and bruises and you learn from it, like you mentioned earlier, and then you try to be better and more resilient and realize that life is ups and downs. And then I feel like there's another person where it's always going to be like, well, life sucks. Like this has happened to me, and so something else is going to happen to me. So if you have a person that's in that second category that is mainly, you know, more upset and negative, can they turn themselves around? Like can they make themselves you know, come to a happy place, and then it'll start to show in their work and in their home life?
I believe that the answer to that question, and it's a great question, is absolutely yes. And it comes by taking responsibility for everything that happens to us. Now, this is a big, big topic, and it has many tendrils. But ultimately, let's take it at its most base level, or I would say probably one of the easier levels. You know, sometimes when things are happening to us at work and we're blaming everyone else, if we take a step back, we might say, how did I contribute to that situation? Did I disengage, you know, because I thought I wouldn't get promoted, so I just disengaged? Did I work hard enough? And you know what, if I think I did all of that and I still feel like, you know, hey, I should be promoted, then we have an opportunity, you have an opportunity, your listener has an opportunity to make an appointment with your boss and say, you know, I'm really devoted to this job and I really want to excel. I'd like to develop a plan with you because, you know, frankly, I'd like to grow. So I'd like to make sure that I have a good plan in place to do that. So there are things that we can do that we often just don't do to help us move along, to take control of our path.
Now, people that, you know, do have, I guess, a more happy characteristic to them. And I know that's a bunch of different levels. I'm assuming that, you know, they are going to be more successful in life just because it's like a positive force that everyone is seeing. What sort of characteristics, you know, should people be on the lookout for to have to help themselves go forward with their career and be better and enjoy their life more?
Yes, great. Well, again, the first one is to really get your mind around this concept of taking responsibility for yourself, full responsibility. If things aren't going the way you want, then the question is, how can you make it better? Find mentors. This is huge. You know, find people who've walked the path before, who are willing to spend a little time with you to help you walk the path. Request, you know, very rarely are mentors assigned to us. We seek them out and we ask for their help. Always be helpful. Always take a moment and you know, open a door, even if it's simple, open a door for someone or just something simple, or recognize that someone did a great job at you know, giving a presentation, or you read a paper they wrote. You know, so these are characteristics that, again, are demonstrated by naturally happy people, people who thrive in extraordinarily difficult situations. And we've learned that these characteristics can be learned by other people. And can I add one more thing, Kelly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, the mind is a powerful thing. This is huge. Basically, what's going on in our heads all day is a sort of like running thought process. We're thinking thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. And the vast majority are negative. You know, oh, why did I say that? Oh, I'm wearing the wrong shoes. You know, oh, I need to lose weight. A million things going on. Self-inquiry, and I think you mentioned it earlier, if we can just get a handle on some of what's going on in our head, because our emotions are generated by our thoughts. If we're pounding ourselves with these negative thoughts all day long, we're not going to be very happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're feeling ourselves really not happy, situationally depressed, you know, we can say, okay, what is going on in my head? Try to get a hold of what you're thinking. Find that thought and then replace it with what is called an equally true but different thought, something that will make you feel better, but that's true. So, for example, I give an example about this. When I was writing the book, I got to a part, you know, have you ever done a project where you write in the middle and you think, I can never finish this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just too much, right? So I got to one of those days, and I didn't realize that's what I was thinking, but I was starting to feel really down. So I said, okay, what am I thinking? And I realized I was thinking, oh, I've taken on too much. It's, you know, I've never written a book before. This is tough. I'm not going to get it done. I'm going to embarrass myself. People know I'm writing it, and if I don't finish it, I'll feel bad. And then I thought, okay, what's an equally true but different thought? And the difference, that thought was, gee, in my career in consulting and in managing organizations, very often I hit this very same point where things were just so hard that it just seemed like there was no way through. And then you just take a step back, reassess, put in place a plan. And, you know, I always got through it. My teams always got through it, my organizations. So I thought that's what I have to do now. And that's what I did. And, you know, I took a break, walked my dogs, came back to work, and I felt much better. And I had to keep doing that because I was in a tough part of the writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very important thing. When you feel badly, ask yourself what you're thinking and replace that thought, which is, you know, an equally true but different thought that makes you feel better. And you'll start to condition your mind to see things in a more positive way.
Do you suggest, Ruth, that people, because I know we've just been speaking a lot about being self-aware, and again, you just mentioned too, and I guess I didn't even think about it, but it's true. There's thousands of thoughts running through our heads every day. Do you think for a person to be more successful, or at least to get a handle on themselves, is if they actually get into the routine of sitting down and writing a little bit about their day to sort of see it on paper? Because I think I know it's helped me. So I'm just wondering if that's something that, and I know people always say, oh, I don't have time. But even if you only do it twice or three times a week, and you're just seeing how you're thinking and actually having that accountability, because I'm very accountable when I write my journals. I'm like, you know, you need to know that you did this, but not negative, just, you know, acknowledging that I did it, whether it's positive or negative, and then moving forward.
Yeah, I think journal writing can be a very powerful process. There's some evidence that says, you know, you really kind of want to, if you're writing about negative stuff, don't dwell on it too much.
Right.
Write it, get it done. Because in a way, by continually writing about the negative, you're reinforcing that thought.
Mm-hmm.
So just be aware of that. The idea of sitting quietly and being in touch with what you're thinking and feeling is huge, whether it's through journaling, whether it's meditation, taking a walk, you know, or some people go for a run, let themselves just get in touch with what's going on in their heads. And, you know, the bottom line is that we are driven by what we think. And the more we can evaluate how well those thoughts are working for us, A lot of us are just on automatic pilot mentally. So, yes, I think journaling, it can be a very powerful tool, Kelly.
And what do you say, Ruth, because I just want, you know, people listening, if they are in these shoes, you know, because, again, just like you just said, that word automatic, I think so many of us are in automatic pilot mode, like, you know, Monday I do this, Tuesday I do this, and then, you know, the weeks and months go by, and you don't even know that all of a sudden, you know, another year has gone by. What do you say to someone who maybe is in a career or a job that they don't want to be in, and I know off the top we mentioned that maybe for financial reasons they have to be there, but what happens if they're not, and what happens if they've just gone into automatic pilot? What do you say to these people to get a kick in the pants to change things and go after their dreams?
Well, first you have to want it. First you have to say, you know, this I want more from work and from life. And then once you decide you really want something, it's amazing how, you know, then you say, well, okay, so I want this. Now what do I have to do to get it? Who do I have? And very often when it comes to a job, it's who do I have to get to know, or who can help me with this? Who, you know, and that's what networking is about. And by the way, let me just say something about networking. We, you know, there's networking and then there's networking. And the old days, kind of the networking concept was who can help me with something. And that's fine to have that. You know, obviously when we're networking, sometimes that's what we're thinking. But a great way to network is to connect with people that you like and say, what can I do for you? How can I help you? When somebody calls me, that's what I always say. How can I help you? Or when I'm networking, how can I help you? Because if I'm willing to help somebody and I can do something for them, first of all, I get a boost. I love to help other people. It just feels great. And then second, if I have to call somebody and say, gee, you know, do you know this person? Would it be, could you, you know, isn't that easier at that point? So helping other people, being helpful to other people. And the other thing about is just get out and get into, you know, there are all these, certainly in the U.S., I don't know if they're in Canada, meetup groups.
Right.
You know, there are lots of ways to connect with people who are interesting and doing fascinating things and just kind of get out in the world and see what's going on. That's half the problem. We just tell ourselves, well, there's no other interesting job available. And I just can't believe that that's true.
And Ruth, where do people get a copy of your book?
Well, you can get my book at Amazon or at barnesandnoble.com. And again, it's From Hired to Happy, and Ruth Garath, G-E-R-A-T-H.
Excellent. Ruth, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
Kelly, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
That's executive coach and author of the book From Hired to Happy, Ruth Garath. Again, check her out, www.garath.com.
Bring on the
Remix.
As you blame yourself, you can't be blamed for the way that you feel. Had no example of a love that was even remotely real. How can you understand something that you never had? Oh baby, if you let me, I can help you out with all of that. Girl, let me love you. Smile, yeah.
A big thank you going out to my guests, Gary and Larry Lane, not to mention Ruth Garath and our music editor, Sharon Hyland. I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Oprah Winfrey. Doing the best at this moment puts you in the best place for the next moment. Now, next week on the show, we welcome back our almost mother of the year, Casey Savage. It's been basically a hot minute since she and I have spoken, and she has lots to say, so she joins us next week. Make sure to follow us on our Twitter account, Kay Alexander Show, as well as checking out our blogs and everything else on our new website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.